Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show with morning show hosts Julie Calamine, that's me, and my co-host Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful. It's Thanksgiving week.
I know it. It's Thanksgiving week. There's a lot going on. We've got a little nice weather coming, some icky weather coming, and then nice weather coming.
Turkey's defrosting in the fridge?
I'm not sure if it's going to be turkey for us this year.
Fish? Are you hoping to catch some for Thursday?
I hate to say it. It might be ham, Phil.
Oh, okay.
So well, anyway, that's right. How about you? What's new with you?
Well, we've got the garden put to bed, the last of the yard work done before snow settles in, and we're getting in shape for winter.
That's right. I'm planning, I said fishing season was over, but I am planning on one last little fishing trip over Thanksgiving.
Well, good luck.
Thank you. I won't do as well as Deb, of course.
We have to try the driveway style.
That's right. And we're mentioning this because Phil and Deb had an eagle drop a cutthroat trout in their driveway.
Beautiful 15-inch cutthroat. Just gorgeous fish.
Sort of a miracle, really. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on to a little bit of weather, and then we're going to introduce our first morning show guests. For those of you who care about weather, and we do because ski season is coming and it's that drizzly fall time, today would be a great day to get out and finish things if you haven't yet, because today we've got sunny weather, a high of 43. Tonight, some patchy fog, a low of 26, and then patchy fog, rain, possible snow, etc., through the rest of the week until Saturday. So Saturday is your next chance for sunny weather, Phil.
It sounds like the turkey trot could be damp.
Yes, it does, but maybe damp is all right if we're exercising and wanting to stay cool.
That's true.
All right, well, we've got some great guests this morning. Phil, why don't you introduce them?
Well, the first half of the show this morning, we have two folks in from Selkirk Outdoor Leadership and Education, also known as SOL. Welcome back to the morning show, Dennison Webb, Executive Director. Good morning, Dennison.
Good morning, Phil.
And Dennison's brought with him today Kara Daniels, Program Coordinator and Field Instructor for SOL. Good morning, Kara.
Good morning.
And so, Kara, you're new to the show, so why don't we start with you? Just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be in Sandpoint and working for SOL.
Sure. So I actually have a very interesting, unique background. I've dabbled in wildlife, conservation and research, and outdoor education. And, recently my husband and I were looking to move up to Sandpoint, and I found SOL. And they just happened to be hiring, so I applied, and it kind of all just worked out from there. I'm pretty excited to be a part of this group.
And how long has that been?
Well, since August.
All right. Well, welcome to the neighborhood.
Thank you.
And I have to ask, how did you land on Sandpoint? We often ask guests this question.
Well, my husband and I always just really loved North Idaho. Both of us went to school at the University of Idaho, and after that, we just fell in love and got a little distracted and then decided just to come back and settle down. So it's just a really wonderful place.
That's right. Are you from Idaho? Are you an Idaho resident originally?
I've been in Idaho for 10 years, but no, I was actually born in New Mexico.
Well, 10 years. The roots are starting to settle into the ground.
I do claim Idaho as my home.
So, Dennison, we like to always start for an overview of the organization. So we have listeners sometimes who are new to the area themselves or first-time listeners. And tell us a little bit about yourself and about SOL.
Yeah, so a little quick, I'll try to be quick and brief about me. I moved to the North Idaho region about 10 years ago and have really been serving mainly as a field instructor and program director, that type of position in the first few years of being here, working at a boarding school. And then my wife and I, Joy Jansen, who also serves on our boards and who is the director of special education for the local school district, we saw an existing need for intentional outdoor education programming in this area. And so we decided to start developing an organization to kind of, really provide those types of programs. But my background is pretty diverse. I've taught higher education, like at Texas A&M, outdoor leadership department, as well as I served as an administrator at a wilderness therapy program. So I've kind of been all over the place.
Good. And so what motivated you to start Soul?
Well, yeah, again, just the real and existing need to, you know, provide these kinds of programs for local area youth. You know, if you look at most of the youth that we serve as an organization, if you just take our snow school program as our as an example, over 70% of those kids, you know, the first time that they ever strap on snowshoes and go out and explore and learn in their winter environment is with Soul and their snow school program. And so, you know, we believe that there's a correlation between poverty and accessing our outdoor landscapes. And we really want to provide a stopgap measure to ensure that our local area youth become informed and empowered citizens. And we do that through experiential and outdoor education.
And what age group of kids are involved in Soul?
Ages 4 to 65.
Well, that's a good segue to move in and talk about some of the specific programs that Soul's offering, has offered and is offering.
Sure.
So, you know, why don't we start with some of those?
Yeah. So, really we're gearing up right now, you know, obviously towards winter. You know, winter is actually our busiest season in terms of, you know, the amount of youth that we reach. You know, our snow school program that I just mentioned is our signature program. It's part of a national program that serves 33,000 youth every year. Here locally, we're gearing up to serve about 600 youth in the Inland Northwest. It's a 5th through 12th grade program mainly, but we are able to custom tailor programs. And, you know, if there was a kindergartner or teacher that wanted to, you know, their kids to learn about snow science and winter ecology, we certainly could do something on campus and have done that. Really our largest stakeholder is the local school district here, and we just began outreaching to other school districts. But it's a three-day program where we come into the classroom and kind of set the tone. And then day two, they're out in the field all day. And then, you know, collecting data, they actually dig snow pits. They do what's called a snow pit analysis, and they're doing, a snow pit profile, rather, and they're collecting data on temperature, snow water equivalency, which is a really big buzz, or SWE, with, you know, that the kids love to say, and hardness. And so they collect that data, they synthesize that data, and then they compare and contrast that data to historical trends. Which is exactly what a hydrologist would do in the winter to really, you know, determine what is our, you know, what are resources, abilities for, you know, come summer, et cetera. So it's a pretty comprehensive program. It's really conservation literacy with a fun twist.
So day one in the classroom, day out, two out in the field, and what's the third day?
Oh, sorry, yeah. Third day is that day of synthesizing that data. So when we go back, so a fifth grade math standard is, as an example, is creating a line graph. And so students have to actually take a data table and plot their data on a line graph. And so, you know, we're hitting math standards, we're hitting science standards, everything is aligned to state and national standards.
Mm-hmm. Definitely so, some science there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you're back in the classroom.
So. Yeah.
And I know in the past you've targeted fifth grade. So you mentioned the fifth grade.
Yeah, curriculum. That's our largest group that we hit. And we just find that's our sweet spot, you mm-hmm. know, because of the standards line up really nicely. And, you know, in terms of like what they need to accomplish for the school year, as well as, you know, honestly, that age group is really a bit more resilient.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start talking about cold and gnarly weather and taking care of yourself in those conditions, you know, those kids have a little bit more, you know, personal responsibility, and we're able to put more on them to keep warm and dry.
And they just move around a lot to burn up a lot of heat.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we have all kinds of little games. But once you get to snow pit, it gets a little, you know, kind of focused. Yeah.
And Kara, this will be your work then.
It will be. I have not been out there in the field yet. This will be my first season, and I'm pretty excited to get those kiddos out there in the snow.
So tell us a little bit about how far-ranging the program is, how many schools you work with, and where they're located.
Every school in the Lake Ponderay School let me rephrase that. Every elementary school in Lake Ponderay School District receives snow school thanks to generous partnerships with like Panhandle Alliance for Education, the Equinox Foundation, the Innova Foundation, We have several, new sponsorships coming through from like Mountain West Bank. We have a matching partner that we're going to be gearing up here starting on Giving Tuesday. Cochava has stepped up to dollar for dollar, $5,000 match. So there's really, I have to say I'm deeply humbled and touched that our community businesses and organizations have really rallied around this program, because this program is 100%, it's not fee for service, meaning like most schools are paying nothing short of, maybe a busing expense or something like that, or helping a kid out with some clothing needs.
Mm-hmm. And you must need some professional staff in order to have this work.
Yeah, we hire every winter, and or I should say fall, and we do an intensive 4-day training, snow school training, to really train, develop instructors. Most of our instructors are coming in with some base foundation of doing outdoor education or wildlife conservation background, so they have that kind of experience. And then so we just kind of help develop them in terms of our curriculum and how to deliver that curriculum. And then they can put their own style on that curriculum over time.
Dennison, we've been talking about snow school, and I understand, of course, that kids learn about water densities, hardness of snow, et cetera. Does the whole concept of avalanche and avalanche safety come in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about quickly about our main population we serve. We also offer middle and high school curriculum that definitely goes into more comprehensive kind of, snow pit analysis. So as an example, instead of, assessing the top, middle, and bottom of the snowpack, they're assessing the snowpack every 10 centimeters. We also do a comprehensive avalanche education program, which starts again in the classroom and goes out into the field. Where that provides the opportunity for students to learn how to utilize a beacon, but also, complete what's called a companion rescue, and also assess the snowpack. So they learn how to do a compression test and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like they learn a lot of snow safety and stuff about the snowpack and water. And you mentioned the winter ecology.
Yep, winter ecology. And that is, I don't know. Kara, do you want to talk a little bit about how you have taught ecology in the past, or do you want me to continue with that?
So I've worked with kiddos of every age almost. We take them out, and I don't necessarily have the snow component of that, but my background is to just teach them about water quality. I've done water quality tests in rivers, and also how to identify macroinvertebrates. So though this isn't snow school stuff, it actually does apply, because the snowpack is our water runoff, and that all kind of links together. And that's really cool to teach them that not only the snow is important, but so is the runoff.
Yeah, and so mm-hmm. so in terms of the ecology piece too, we're offering, as an example, the Wild Winter Kids event, which will teach a bit about ecology. And so things like winter adaptations, and we do this in the field as well. Like, if we're hiking along and all of a sudden there's a teachable moment, I love teachable moments. There's a little snowshoe hare in its natural habitat, which happens actually quite often, and the snowshoe hare is statuing, not moving. It's an awesome opportunity right there to actually observe this animal in its habitat and talk about what it's doing, why, and all that good stuff. But we do have certain activities that we do as far as winter ecology en route to the snow pit. I don't want to ruin any surprises for anyone. We would encourage you to come out and join snow school and get on the snow, strap on some snowshoes. We can always bring a few extras. Just reach out to us and get on the snow and watch us in action.
You're inviting adults? I could come along and watch?
You could. You need to pass a background check.
All right.
Julie, sorry.
Oh, I guess I won't be signing up. Kidding.
Yeah, you could pass.
I would think so.
Now I'm intrigued. We want to find out for nothing else to get the background check.
There we go. Well, we'll talk about that off air, Phil. And we've talked a bit about snow school, and it really sounds great. It's intriguing. It does something for all the fifth graders. But I've got another item on my outline, and it's Reach and Teach Field Campus Campaign. What is that?
Yeah, so we've been busy. And so Currently, we're developing a field campus up on Schweitzer. Thanks to their support, we're able. You know, we have a little chunk of ground, and we're developing a field campus. And this field campus is going to serve as really a satellite for all of our mountain-based programs. So, our hope, though, over time, is that this campus develops into an outdoor learning center that really the community can actually access. And have like interpretive games and things like that, that the kiddos can like walk around and, you know, what lives in my subnivian zone and kind of like move their hand through this, board game, if you will, to learn about that. So It's not going to be ideally one dimensional, only for us kind of thing. It's more of a community resource is how we're really looking at this. And so to date, what is really exciting is Interstate Concrete and Preferred Concrete Pumping. Thanks to them, as well as other Sandpoint Building Supply, we've been able to put in our footers. So now we have 28 concrete footers in the ground. It's right there by the roundabout. And the Field Campus campaign in particular is we're looking for additional sponsors to step in and really help us acquire what's going to be a 30-foot yurt with the wind and snow load capacity and all that kind of good stuff. So that's going to be our structure, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And so this is up near the roundabout?
Yeah, it's right. So if you're going to the mountain, everybody knows where the firehouse is. So it's going to be right positioned to the, if you're facing the firehouse, to the right of the firehouse.
Well, what a great plan and what a great campaign, yurt for the kids to get out of the weather. And
exactly. Warm up a little bit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great location. Is that in partnership with Schweitzer?
Partnership with Schweitzer. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. And, so Bonner General Health is a contributing sponsor. I mentioned Kachava before in their matching grant that's going to be launching on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. The Wishnick Foundation, and the other folks I previously mentioned.
Now, I know you want to talk about an upcoming event you have, because those education and fundraising opportunities are important, but tell us about other programs. You touched briefly on the Wild Winter, but that was something originally we thought we might talk a little more about.
Sure. So Wild Winter is going to be a really cool kids event. It's designed specifically for those parents attending the Backcountry Film Festival. Instead of finding childcare that evening, it's more of a, hey, we have this cool program, drop your kiddos off, go enjoy the film festival, and then come back and pick up your kids. And we have all sorts of really awesome activities planned. We're going to learn about North Idaho animals that hibernate that a lot of people don't really know about, like the newt or the western tiger salamander. People don't really think about things like that. And so we're going to teach the kiddos about that and snowy owls and how they're adapted to Arctic temperatures and how we do get some here in Idaho. The woodland caribou, we're going to talk about that. And we have crafts planned. And it's supposed to be a really awesome, fun, comfortable evening for the kids. And
so it's a one-time event during the Backcountry Film Festival?
That's the plan right now, yes.
It sounds great. What if someone's not able to go to the film festival, wants to bring their kids to the event? Is it open for that?
That's a great question. I would say that reach out. Ideally, you do go to the film festival because it is a fundraiser for our snow school program. Although if for whatever reason you had a conflict, feel free to reach out. Right now we do have some spaces left, but it is enrolling really, registering really strong. So, you do need to register for it.
Did we get the dates and the contact info?
Yeah. So the dates, for both the Wild Winter, kids event, as well as the Backcountry Film Festival is November 30th. So not this week, but next week.
Soon.
The Friday the 30th. And the times are 5 to 10, approximately.
And so we want to hear more about the film festival. What's the age range you're targeting for the Wild Winter Kids event?
The age range will be 4 to 10. If people are interested in enrolling, then they need to go to our website and check that out. And they have a little register button. It's $10 to register. And I think we, again, have a few spots open, so quickly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And remind us of the website.
Soulexperiences.org.
All right.
Well, I think it sounds like we need to hear more about this Backcountry Film Festival. I know it's been going on for years, but again, there's some people that are new to the area, so give us a little bit of
history, really,
too.
Really fun event. It's a annual event that I think this is our fourth year bringing it to Sandpoint. It's an international film festival that celebrates the human-powered backcountry experience. So, you know, a lot of folks consider ski films, go big or go home kind of films. This has some of that, I would imagine, usually it has some kind of cool, really, really neat ski films, but it's not limited to only ski films. So conservation films and all kinds of really neat things.
Sure. Maybe the quieter side of the backcountry.
Exactly. Yes. Celebrating the human powered experience is what it's about. But really anybody can enjoy the films. This has typically traditionally been a family event, and we're kind of bummed out a little bit because we had hoped that our the Hive's licensing would have permitted that this year, but looks like it's going to take a little bit longer for us to get it to where it's open to, all ages. It's a licensing thing, so to sell, alcohol and that kind of stuff. But yeah, we'll have our VIP sponsors will have, it's like a catered event. They'll have food and all that kind of stuff. And, you can get a VIP ticket and there's couches upstairs. It's going to be kind of a neat deal.
So it's 21 and over?
It is 21 and over, correct. Yep.
So run through sort of quickly the date, time, location.
Okay. So the date, again, is February 30th at
November 30th.
Oh, sorry. I don't know what is February.
I know.
It is not February. And November 30th from 5 to 10 at the Hive, located in beautiful and historic Sandpoint, Idaho.
Preview for any of the films? Any titles popped out at you when you're
there's a trailer. If you go to our Facebook page or the Hive's Facebook page, you can actually see the actual film festival trailer there. Yep.
Okay.
All right. And
it's in the discussion of the event. And there are hard tickets available if you want to save a little bit of money in advance at Evans Brothers, iCarts, and the Alpine Shop.
All right.
Well, it sounds like a fun evening.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. Yeah.
I think we've touched on all things winter, unless there's a winter program we've missed.
No.
But Sol does work year round.
We do offer avalanche courses too. We're an ARRI, American Institute for Avalanche Research and Education, ARRI provider, avalanche education provider. So, along with the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, which we definitely support, and they offer courses as well. And, so I would suggest anyone that's, even if you're snowshoeing or snowmobiling or whatever, extreme snow angeling, definitely get educated. That last one was a joke. Definitely get out and get educated, and take an avalanche course.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely plenty around.
Are there a range of courses that you offer, or is it?
We do. We offer what's called a ARRI 1, which is a level 1 course, ARRI 2, which is level 2 course, and the ARRI Avalanche Rescue, which is the new Rec Pro split requirement. So you got to take that before the level 2.
Mm-hmm. And details on any upcoming classes?
We have an all-inclusive class that's going to be hosted in Hamilton, Montana, down in Mountain Lodge. We're offering a course with Whitman College, which is going to be awesome. This is our second year offering a course with them. We have women-specific course hosted in Libby, Montana, which has been really popular with our partner, She Jumps. So, get on our website and check it out.
All right.
Yeah. Great. Well, I know y'all have staff and work with other grant providers, but does Sol have needs from the community, volunteer needs?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we are actually, and we have one applicant so far, but we definitely are looking for volunteers, specifically folks that have experience with photography, web development. So something more like that, but we're also always looking for volunteers to serve and just outreach. Folks are like, hey, I'm retired and I want to be in a field instructor and I have this background that parallels what we do. We definitely love to have that. So really, I don't want to limit it. We're like every other nonprofit in this area. We're always look for board members that are, pretty solid and able to to help further our mission.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So we have just a few minutes left, but you want to touch quickly on any of the other programming things that happened during the year?
Well, sure. Yeah. You know, we are a 24/7, 365 organization. You know, Kara is going to be also, as we work towards spring and fall, the Bees to Bear project. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the Bees to Bear project is really cool. We work with Idaho Fish and Game and Yellowstone to Yukon. They are currently doing grizzly bear restoration habitat work. And so what Soul is going to be providing is obviously the kiddos to get them out in the field. And currently we are working on developing a bear safety program. So we are going to try and get into classrooms and teach kiddos how to use bear spray, bear bags, and to recognize the difference between grizzly bears and black bears, and just ultimately be safe out in bear country. And so that's our kind of our next big project.
Yeah, that's so important to do.
Right. Well, kids have to be safe with both bears and bees.
That's right.
Both can get you.
They sure can.
It's true.
That's right. Well, I would like to thank you all for joining us this morning. We've just been talking with Soul, Selkirk Outdoor Wilderness Experience, with Executive Director Dennison Webb and new field instructor Kara Daniels. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short song break, and then we'll be on to our next interview. Because in 1966, the Supremes were keeping us all hanging on, and we'd like to keep listeners hanging on for our second interview. So here we go with You. And I hope you did all hang on to listen to the second half of the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show here in downtown Sandpoint. This is Julie Calamine, and I'm with my co-host, Phil Huff. Phil, we've got another guest.
We do. We thought we'd do a little yin-yang today. We were talking winter and winter sports and snow school safety with Dennison. And it's time before summer fades completely to reflect on some of the wonderful hiking opportunities the area has and things going on with the Idaho Trails Association.
Absolutely.
So we've got Tom Dabrowski, president of the Idaho Trails Association, ITA for short. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Well, thank you, Phil and Julie. That's nice to be here.
Good to see you, Tom.
No stranger. We didn't have to give him very many instructions. We just shoved the microphone in front of his face.
That's right.
But, Tom, there are people always who are new listeners, first-time listeners, who may not be aware of what Idaho Trail Association does. So why don't we start with an overview?
Certainly. The Idaho Trails Association has a very simple mission, and that's to promote the continued enjoyment of Idaho's hiking trails. These are non-motorized hiking trails. We're really blessed here in the state of Idaho. We have 10,000 miles of non-motorized hiking trails in the state. That's the good news. The bad news is we don't have enough money to maintain many of those trails. So in 2010, some folks founded the Idaho Trails Association. It's a group of volunteers that get together and go out and work on these trails. In our very first year, we did one trail in McCall, Idaho. 13 people went out and worked on that trail. This past year, 2018, we had 262 volunteers that spent 7,600 hours out in the woods working on our hiking trails. And so we've just kicked off our 2018-19 membership drive. And so we're asking people to join the Idaho Trails Association and donate whatever they can afford and come out and help us keep these trails open.
So I want you to repeat those a couple of those numbers because they're really, really impressive. How many volunteers and how many hours this last year?
This last year, 262 different people, different volunteers, spent 7,600 hours working on our hiking trails.
That's just remarkable.
It really is. And the other thing is, it's really fun.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm a trail maintainer, hiker junkie. So I get it.
And in an additional disclosure, I too am a volunteer and somewhat of a trail clearing junkie, not to the degree that Tom or Phil might be.
I think we contributed a few of those hours, although I'm already looking at my next summer going, we need to step it up, Julie. We need to do more.
I think so. It's amazing to consider where you've come from and gotten to in just these 8 years.
And I think part of the reason is people really think this is a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. As we all know, the literature and the reporting from the medical profession is get off the couch, get out and walk. Exercise is good for you. Mm-hmm. And so here we have these wonderful trails where people can go exercise. We just need to keep them open. The other interesting statistic, last year we cut over 1,100 logs off of the trails that we worked on. And we use all hand tools. We don't use chainsaws. We use crosscut saws, which we have to use in wilderness areas, but we use those in non-wilderness areas because then everybody can have the experience of using the tool, cutting the log out, and the satisfaction of saying, wow, this trail wasn't passable before we started, and now it's open.
And I must admit, it's a pretty satisfying experience to have cut a massive log off of a trail with an old-fashioned crosscut saw. It's really quite an experience.
Mm-hmm, it is. And Julie was on one of our week-long projects this last year, and she and I and a couple of other folks had to take what was potentially a pretty dangerous tree that had fallen across a trail. We had to take that out. And we did that with a crosscut saw, and it really went well.
And what a skill, too, to make sure that not only individuals know, but institutionally we don't lose that knowledge or ability, because it is necessary in so many places and in many ways so much more efficient than a chainsaw. It doesn't break down in the backcountry. It doesn't require the gas to be carried in. And but people were at risk of losing those skills.
Yes, and one other thing I'll say is if any of the listeners out there have an old crosscut saw that your grandpa had or whatever, please think about donating that to the Idaho Trails Association. And that would be, we would really appreciate it. They no longer make these old-style crosscut saws. And we have a lot of them now. We have a fellow that professionally maintains those, and they're razor sharp and lots of fun to use.
They are. I have to back up to chainsaws for a moment, though, because every time I talk about my experience with Idaho Trails and that we used all hand saws and nothing that was powered by gas, it just comes up every single time. Wouldn't it be more efficient? Wouldn't it be better? Couldn't they get more done if they just got some chainsaws in there?
I'm asked that question a lot. In fact, I'll talk in a few moments about what the Forest Service, U.S. Forest Service, has asked us to do in terms of growth. But we get that question quite a bit. And here's the simple answer. That we can have 12 volunteers out working on a trail, and within a half an hour, all 12 of those volunteers can be using crosscut saws. That's not the same with a chainsaw. I use chainsaws. We have a tree farm, and I use chainsaws, and they are potentially very dangerous. The Forest Service requires special training to use chainsaws on U.S. Forest Service land, and you have to be certified to do that. So in terms of efficiency, it turns out we can have more people using crosscuts than we can using chainsaws. Then there's the other thing. That we're out there, the outdoor experience is all about quiet. It's all about the smell of the woods and the sounds of the woods. And the smell and the sounds don't work when they're permeated with two-cycle chainsaw fumes and the noise. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are an efficient tool, but they just don't fit with a quiet wilderness experience. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the Forest Service and expectations, and I'm sure you're not going to say they've thrown a lot more money at the problem. Errors of shrinking budgets still continue, right?
Absolutely. The fundraising is a real challenge for us, and I want to thank there are some local foundations that donate money to the Idaho Trails Association. Corporations donate money. Our members donate money. We raise the money that we use to do these projects. It does not come from the federal budget. And what the Forest Service has told us is They have a huge backlog with trail maintenance, and they want us to double the number of hours that we spend working on trails over the next 5 years. And, oh, by the way, there's no money that comes with that. They've basically told us, you have to go find the funding to do that. And guess what? We're going to do it. We'll go find the funding, and we will double the number of hours we're doing on the trails because they're worth it.
All right. It sounds like a commitment to me, and we'll have you back in 5 years. We'll have you back before 5 years.
Uh-huh.
But in 5 years, we'll reflect on this and see how much you've exceeded that goal by.
Exactly.
True. But I'd like to hear a bit about what's going to be happening in 2019. What's up? What places and what trails are on the schedule? Tell us about a few of them.
That's a great question, Julie. I was just on the phone with our executive director, Jeff Halligan, this morning, and we were talking about some of the projects that we're looking at. We will be doing a lot of week-long projects in the wilderness areas in Idaho. There's 15 different wilderness areas in Idaho. We're going to start in March. We're going to jet boat up the main fork of the Salmon River up to a place called Sheep Creek, which goes up into the Gospel Hump Wilderness. We'll spend a week in there working on that trail. And from there, we will have a series of week-long projects into different remote areas of the state to work on trails that just don't get worked on. Places like the Frank Church Wilderness, the Seven Devils Wilderness, the Sawtooths, and the White Clouds, plus some areas that are not wilderness areas. We'll probably be doing something up here in northern Idaho, over on the Priest Lake side, and something up in the Bonners Ferry District. The thing that I do want to say is that during our membership drive, which is underway right now, that for every $25 that someone donates, and we are a 501c3, so membership dues are tax deductible. For any $25 that people donate in the membership drive, we will put in one chance in a drawing to win one of six slots on that Sheep Creek project in March. So, for example, if you donate $100, you get four chances in the drawing. And those six people will then have a chance to go. We're going to have our board of directors and our advisory board members go on that project, and it'll be a whole lot of fun. We'll provide all the food, and we'll have a big camp set up up the river.
So you get to meet all the folks associated with running the organization, plus you get to eat pretty good. I hear the food's pretty good on these trips.
The cook that will be going along with us cooked for me on a trip I led in the Selway Bitterroot this last summer. She's fantastic. Her name is Liz. Great cook. And she's really excited about going. And so it's going to be a good trip.
That, I would imagine, would be a very special ITA trip. But listening to the scheduled trips that you've cited, it sounds like a backpacker's dream list, really. A way to get out and see areas that you may not ever get to if you weren't able to help out with the ITA.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you may or may not have the full schedule for what I'll call local, say, North Idaho events up yet for 2019, but there were quite a few in 2018.
There were 12 projects in northern Idaho this last year, and the most we've ever done. And by the way, for your listeners, I'd really like to hear from them. If they have any ideas, trails that they've hiked that they think, boy, this trail really needs help, please send me an email. You can send it to tom@idahotrailsassociation.org. That's my ITA email address. Again, tom@idahotrailsassociation.org, and send me those suggestions, because we're always looking. We like to work on user-used trails, the trails that people want to see maintained. This last year, we did, for example, Harrison Lake, and a very popular trail, and we always do Mickinac. We always do the Mickinac Trail in the spring, and so we're looking for ideas from the users.
Yeah, that trip.
I was just going to say that really the users are the ones who know which places and which areas on trails need the most work. So it's a lot of work just to find the areas that need help, and the listeners could help you quite a bit, Tom.
They could. And the interesting thing now is the ITA has earned a reputation for doing really good work, for having projects that are a lot of fun. And so we generally get a lot more requests than we can fulfill. So that's why we're doing a membership drive. Let's go find more people who are willing to join, more people who are willing to volunteer, and then we can do more each year.
And Tom, some of the trips that you've just been mentioning are a little longer trips. They're week-long trips where a person might need to devote a vacation, a week of vacation, but they're not all that way. Some are day-long, some are weekend, some are car camping, right?
Yes, and we actually have more one-day or two-day trips than we do the week-long trips. So this next year, we'll have many one-day trips here in northern Idaho, throughout the whole state. And we do some weekend trips, some overnights. We had a great one on the upper North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River this last summer. And so we'll do more of those. But yes, lots of opportunity for people to come out on a Saturday and to help a local trail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one days seem to draw a lot of people out here locally.
Yes, they do.
Well, it's a fabulous organization and a lot of great work, and trails like the Mikinik would be hard-pressed to stay open without the routine care and maintenance they get, and they're such gems for the community.
Oh, I've been on that trail every month of the year. I've never been alone on that trail.
It's well used. Yeah. You know, you mentioned 50,000 miles of hiking trails in Idaho. It seems to me that must put us toward the top in terms of the nation's states with a lot of hiking miles.
It's 10,000 miles.
Oh, 10,000?
Yeah, 10,000. That's
still a lot.
Okay. I apologize if I said 50, but it's...
No, I don't always down my notes.
10,000, but you're absolutely right. And the interesting thing, it's not just the total number of miles. It's the quality of the terrain, the quality of the area you visit. And Idaho really has some fantastically beautiful places. And these trails go into some spectacular places. The problem is that many of those places are unstable. You have rock slides, you have mud slides, you have trees. We did a project in the Frank Church Wilderness. One trail had been closed for 10 years by a massive log slide that came through there. And, I mean, there are trees jackstrud all over that trail. In 24 hours, we cleared the trail. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's it. If the trail is closed, nobody's on it until someone gets in there.
And that backcountry is so important to maintain access to, and it presents the challenges that you've mentioned already. And so a lot of times we wind down the show, a few minutes left. We like to ask how people can help. You've touched on a couple things, maybe worth reiterating how folks can help.
Sure. Again, we're having a membership drive. If you go to IdahoTrailsAssociation.org website, you'll see some interesting things on the website. There will be a link to for membership and then a further link to join. And please go ahead and do that. You can leave suggestions for trails that you'd like to see done. And then on there, there's some interesting information about what kinds of things to bring on trips and some really interesting hikes.
And there'll be some information regarding next summer's projects up. When would be a good time to have people start looking for that?
It'll be in late February. We'll start firming up the schedule. Mm-hmm. We're working now with land managers to find out, okay, which trails do they like? And then we need the input from the hikers to see which trails they'd like to have us do.
Yes. And then for those of us who would love to get on the jet boat trip, we need to get our $25 chances in. And I'll be getting a couple in because I would love to be able to join that group.
All right. We'd love to have you do that.
What's not to like? Jet boats, crosscut saws, the wilderness, and good food.
Exactly.
And good company. Tom Dabrowski, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you.
Idaho Trails Association lives up here in the Panhandle and has been so instrumental in helping Idaho Trails grow.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil and Julie.
Thank you. Well, we're going to take another short song break. And again, we're looking at This Day in Music, and I'm going to cue up Bill Haley and his Comets, because on this day in 1955, Rock Around the Clock was the number one UK hit.